Case, Taylor versus Truckee Meadows Fire Protection District. This is docket number 78971. Council, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
All right. Very good. Come on up.
Good morning, Your Honors. Michael Wall. I have the distinct pleasure and honor today to represent injured fire captain Vance Taylor in this appeal in which he is seeking to recover the benefits that should have been due to him because of his injury and his inability to work. Captain Taylor has a distinguished career as a firefighter, more than 30 years with the Truckee Meadows Fire Protection District. Despite his time with the district, certain people at the district apparently felt that his abilities and training would be more better used as an assistant filing clerk during the time that he was in need of light duty work because of his injury. This case is not about the facts. As far as I know, there are no disputes as to any fact in this case. This case is about construction of the statutes at issue. The fire district has argued that this court should apply the plain language of the statutes, and that's exactly what I agree with. I think the plain language of the statute would dictate that the light duty job that was offered to Captain Taylor was not in compliance with the statute. Most particularly with respect to the hours worked. The fire district has focused on the number of hours worked. They've said, look, he only has to work 40 hours now. Before, he had to work 48 hours, so it's fewer hours, and that's similar, and that's good enough. That's the entire argument that we got from the fire district, but I would suggest that it's not so much about the number of hours that are worked as it is about the hours that are worked. And that's what the statute says. The statute says that the position that is offered has to be substantially similar to the prior position with respect to the hours the employee is required to work. Not the number of hours, the schedule of hours, because nothing could be more disparate than the schedule that Captain Taylor was working all of his life as a firefighter and the 8-to-5 office job Monday through Friday that was offered to him as light duty work. Now, it would seem that this would, in some circumstances, might seem like a minor thing. But the hours worked is what the statute says for a reason. Different workers having different hours, they build their life around that. No one more so than Captain Taylor. Captain Taylor testified and his wife testified, and that's evidence that was before the court, before the administrative agency and then before the district court in the record, that working the way that the 8 hours a day, Monday through Friday, in an office complex instead of at the fire station was a substantial prejudice to him and to his family and a difficulty. What the fire district has ignored in their brief is the history of the case. They started out with, he got injured, we admit that, we offered him a job, and he didn't accept it. And that job wasn't so different from the other job, so we cut off of his benefits. And that was done correctly. But they ignore the fact that after the injury, Captain Taylor was released to light duty work because he had to have some time before he could have his shoulder injury. He didn't just strain his shoulder. He had a serious shoulder injury. He had to have some time off so that his shoulder could recuperate before they could even do the surgery. And during that time, the fire district offered him the office job. And it was simply did not work out for him and for his family. The reason it didn't work out for him and his family, there are multiple reasons, but one of the most important is the fact that his wife is a published author and in the publishing business. And her business is to travel from place to place and go to conferences, book signings, those kinds of things. And this is all scheduled out years in advance, because this schedule that Captain Taylor was working is a schedule that rotates on a 6-day basis. And so they know exactly what the time is. So Captain Taylor is home caring for the children 4 days a week. He's off for 4 days. Now he's in the office. He can't get the children to school on time because he has to start working before the school starts. He can't pick the children up because he's still working when the children are done at school and they have to have child care, and he's not there to be with the children in the same way that he was, and his wife can't travel. And so this was a tremendous impact on him and on his family financially, not just because they had to pay for child care, not just because
Did he present evidence about that at the evidentiary hearing in this matter?
He did. He testified about that himself. He testified to the impact that it had, and his wife also testified to the impact that there was on her and on the children and on the family. The fire district has focused on, well, he didn't provide any documentation about how much they spent or how much it cost them. But these kinds of things, number one, can't always be documented in that way. She had to rearrange her schedule. That can't be documented in that way. The fact is that there's really no doubt about the impact. The argument that the record doesn't show impact is just, I think, a hyper-technical argument
It sounds like the argument isn't so much about necessarily, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, that it's not so much about financial impact, but just upset their schedule and their organization of their household. Is that?
It upset their schedule. It upset the organization of their household, but it also had a direct financial impact to them, and it was testified to particularly by Captain Vance's wife. She was unable to travel and unable to earn the money that they were relying on that comes from her, and they had to pay for child care. Now, it's true that the record doesn't, they didn't bring in evidence showing exactly how much they spent, but that's not really the point. The point is that the job that was offered was not substantially similar with respect to the hours that were worked.
So, Mr. Wall, had the offer been the same number of hours but for the same office position, would you have the same argument?
Yes, because he actually had fewer number of hours to work. On the schedule that he was on, which was the 4896 schedule, he worked 48 hours.
Perhaps you misapprehend my question.
I'm sorry, I missed it.
If the facts in this case had been that they had offered him the same job, an office administrative job, at the same hours he'd been working before, would you have the same argument?
We would have a different case if they had offered him the same schedule that he had before. I think that that's the most important issue in this.
And with respect to the financial side, I would be my understanding that had he had the hours and the schedule that he worked before, then he would have qualified for overtime compensation, where he wasn't able to do so in the hours that they offered him. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor. If he had worked those hours that he was working, he could have gotten the overtime that he was being paid and the benefits that he got for the holiday benefits. And that was also testified to in the record. Mm-hmm. So all of those things are important. The fact that the location is in an office instead of in a fire station, he's a fireman. He's a fire chief. He supervises other firemen. He answers
to the fact that the position that they offered him
pre-surgery and post-surgery was humiliating and disgraceful or insulting. That's really not part of your argument?
That's absolutely part of my argument, Your Honor.
So where in the statute would you get that? Where in the statute does it say that they would, I understand your point about the hours, but where in the statute would it require them to offer the logistics position, I believe that's what he was referring to, that he should have had in the alternative?
The statute has been interpreted by this court in the Amazon .com case as requiring that the job that's offered has to be similar to the job that was before. And this court has also said in the Dillard case, when the employee was demoted specifically to humiliate her, I will admit that it was done specifically for that purpose in that case, that was not a valid offer under the statute. That's an interpretation.
The Beckwith case wasn't about this statute, counsel, was it? Beckwith was about someone who was terminated after having an injury. It wasn't about this statute on TTD benefits.
The Dillard case was she was constructively terminated. She quit because she was demoted.
Right. She filed a lawsuit for damages for termination.
Exactly, but the standard is still exactly the same. She was given the job. The job was offered to her, and the job that was offered to her wasn't appropriate under the circumstances because of the demotion which they gave her specifically because she had an accident.
So is your position that working in a clerical position in an office doing work that actually needs to be done is demeaning or humiliating?
Being a secretary is not demeaning. Doing secretarial work is not demeaning in any way. Being a fire chief in the position that he's in, when an opportunity exists that they could have assigned him to the fire station and there was plenty of work there that he could have done, and answering to a secretary under those circumstances was definitely demeaning. It was humiliating to Captain Taylor, and he testified that it was humiliating to him, that the way that it was handled the first time.
Counsel, could I return to one other? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Finish your thought, and then I'll ask my question.
Whatever it was is gone, Judge.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I apologize, Mr.
No, Ross. I'm sorry.
Okay, I shouldn't have interrupted you. But I did want to circle back to this compensation and hours issue. I'm operating under the understanding that your client was compensated for the same base pay even though he worked fewer hours. Isn't that
same true? Base pay even though he was working fewer hours. That's correct.
So what I'm trying to understand, and I understand your point about the scheduling issues, but what I'm trying to understand is where in the statute is there an obligation on the part of the employer to arrange or offer him positions that qualifies him for holiday pay, overtime pay? Where do you see that? And if we were writing an opinion, where would we get it?
The statute says that the position that's offered has to be substantially similar in location, the hours worked, and the benefits. And I would say that in the employee, and it says the same employee benefits, if there's the opportunity under his employment to get benefits that are no longer available to him, I would say it's not the same employee benefits.
Take the precedent that this case might generate from your argument and apply it in other contexts where an employer doesn't have an alternative job. What do they do then? Does the statute mandate that, and are they required to do it in every instance?
They have to give him something that is a type of work that they do, which is appropriate and fair under all of the circumstances. And here, quite frankly, the fairness issue is the schedule and the fact that he's trained to be a fire chief, and he could answer to the battalion commander, and he could do that kind of work, and they had that kind of work, and they didn't assign it to him. Instead, they gave him an 8-to-5 job Monday through Friday, which could not possibly work for him. I think that under the statute, that violates the statute. If an office worker were injured who worked 8 to 5 Monday through Friday somehow, and then was assigned to work on a 48-hour straight shift, the court wouldn't hesitate to say that that wasn't a similar offer. Why is it different the other way around? It isn't different the other way around. The offer is simply not similar. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wall. Counsel?
Your Honor, so am I permitted to speak without?
Yes, we've got you socially distanced enough. I think that would be perfectly fine.
May it please the court, I'm Robert Balkenbush on behalf of the Public Agency Compensation Trust and the Truckee Meadows Fire Protection District. This case, as you know, and Mr. Wall tried to indicate, it's simply about a temporary offer of light-duty employment to accommodate Mr. Taylor's physical restrictions post-surgery. And after that offer, he went back to his pre-injury job as a battalion chief. What the fire district did is try, I think, to accomplish what the policy of the Workers' Compensation Act is, which is to provide economic security to the workers. There was a question by Justice Hardesty that to Mr. Wall, and he admitted that essentially Mr. Taylor, who was working 48-96 shift, 48 hours on, 96 hours off, we offered him a job that was 40 hours a week, but we were offering the same pay. And the offer expressly said...
You say it's the same pay, is it really the same pay?
Yes.
Because he was getting apparently overtime because it's 48 hours as opposed to 40?
Right. What I think what the offer says and what the law says is that if it's not in the same classification of employment, it has to be substantially similar.
Right.
That's what the offer says. So if it's the same classification of employment, it's the exact same pay. If it's not in the same classification, substantially similar.
Your position is that the 40 hours a week, I guess at the same base hourly rate, is substantially similar to the 48 hours with that many hours of overtime.
I did the math. What he was making before he was hurt was a little over $10,000 a month gross wage. That equates to about $67 per hour. 40 hours times $67 per hour is $10,720. That's without overtime. So what the district did is really try to essentially keep the same pay for Mr. Taylor, have him do something that was essential to the district, because what he was doing was there was work in the administrative office that the fire district needed, and to allow him just get over this period of time where he was recovering from surgery. And he had worked the job previously, and there was no documented complaints in the record on appeal. I think Mr. Wall said that the husband and wife testified about financial strain, emotional strain. I did the trial. I was there. But because there were no documented complaints when he worked that job previously, I think it's reasonable for the appeals officer to have required corroboration.
Was there anything in the record as to the anticipated recovery time from the surgery?
I mean, in terms of absolute specifics, no.
After his surgery, what was his expected recovery time to be, if that was in the record?
Well, in the record, there was no, sort of what you would call a prognostication by the doctor. There was physical therapy and after the surgery, but by September 7th, she released him to work, and it was, he was still in a sling with the shoulder that they operated on, but he couldn't lift more than 5 pounds or anything overhead, but released him to work. And the job we offered was within those physical restrictions, and it was a period of about 6 weeks, and he just chose to reject that.
So it was about 6 weeks, about a six-week period, and then he was able to work without limitations and went back to his old job.
That's right. Okay. Right. From the time of the offer, September 7th, 2016, the light duty job offer was September 9th by the district, and then he came up with a very detailed, after he consulted with legal counsel and the union, he came up with a very detailed objection to it, and so the administrator, because the job in the administrator's mind met the qualifications of the statute, said that you can make that choice, but what you're choosing to do is to essentially go without TTD, and you could have had your full pay, and so I think essentially what we tried to do is offer a job that really would have helped him, and what we've gotten is criticism for that, and I think it's unjustified criticism.
So could I return to the statutory language?
Yes.
It's interesting, everybody argued the statutory language, but we're not focused too much on the statutory language.
Yes.
I'd like to take a look at subsection 8, B and C.
Of 616C475?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Thank you. And focus your attention on the words gross wage in subsection B and benefits, employment benefits in subsection C. And my question as to both kind of answered the gross wage issue factually. It sounds like the gross wage, the base pay for his position was paid or offered anyway. But the question then becomes whether employment benefits include overtime that he would have been able to obtain had he been working in the other position, or do employment benefits relate to things that I like to think of as health insurance or those kinds of things?
What I think you have to look, but what I would tell the court is you have to look at the offer. And regardless of the nature of people that normally work in the administrative office, the offer was same benefits. Now, Mr. Taylor said he was not going to get the same benefits, but the offer was same benefits. But now, obviously,
is the loss of overtime and holiday pay, which is a point that's been made by the appellant, how does that fall into the analysis under the statute then?
Well, obviously, what I would say is that at regular time, 40 hours a week, $67 an hour, we had to use whatever his wage base was. That's $10,720. In the average monthly wage determination, we identified how much he was making when he was working the $48.96 on average 12 weeks before the injury, and it was actually a little bit less. So he'd be actually making more at this light duty job, and he was.
Can you explain that?
Yeah. Well, all I did, based on my calculation of $67 an hour, which was based upon what he was making in gross wages pre-injury,
okay,
that comes out about $67 an hour. If you multiply that times 40 hours a week, that's $2,680 a week, times 4 weeks, that's $10,720. And I believe the determination letter.
So somehow working fewer hours at the same hourly wage adds up to more? I'm worried about the math there.
Well, it's confusing to you simply because the amount of money that he was making pre-injury is based on an average of 12 weeks. And so in his fire job, sometimes he has overtime, sometimes he has less. That's just an average over the course of 12 weeks. So the numbers aren't exactly right. My number's an estimate of what you would make at $67 an hour, which is the rate that the district promised. They promised him essentially a wage that was going to be substantially similar to what he was making at the time. So all I'm saying is that it's very close. The standard substantial similarity.
The 12-week period that you used to calculate that hourly rate included overtime and holiday pay?
I think it did, Your Honor. It's in the record.
Yeah.
I will cite that to you if I can. In the appendix, there was an average monthly wage determination, and.
Well, why don't you give that to the clerk rather than using your time?
All right.
Now?
Anyway, Your Honor, we took all of his wages. both his base pay plus, I think, overtime and whatever. And that was what, it was $10,000-something a month on average. Mm-hmm. And so what they offered was essentially a wage was substantially similar to that. And if you take that number, which is in the record, I can give that to the clerk, it comes out about $67 an hour at 40 hours a week. That's over 10 grand. So that's very substantially similar. And I think it was, I want to make one other point, is I think Mr. Wall said, it's not the number of hours worked, but the schedule of hours. And I think what he's trying to argue, he didn't expressly argue this, but I think what he's trying to argue is that we have to offer the same kind of shift. Mm-hmm. And I think the statute doesn't say that. It just says hours.
Well, what if he was put on, like, can you just put him on, you know, the, God, what do they call the overnight shift? The graveyard shift. Can they just put him on 11 to 7, 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. and say, here, work 40 hours a week?
No. We didn't do that.
There's some
jurisdictions. I just give you some examples. I looked at other in cases other jurisdictions. There was a case out of I don't have the state here, but I had given it to the appeals officer where the new position was 387 miles away. There was one where it was Foreman versus West Kalkesu Hospital, where there was this nurse and they gave her a graveyard shift, 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. Well, she had a child that was only 6 months old, and she said, I have to nurse the child. And so I didn't want to take the job because I'm the only one that can nurse the child. And so she didn't take the job, and they denied benefits. They said, well, you can't do that. That's unreasonable. But in this case, all we tried to do is to step in a limited window of time and offer 6 weeks of work. And at essentially the same pay he was making before. Yes, the hours are slightly different, but there has to be some reasonableness to it. And I think we did comply, substantially comply with
the
statute.
What if it was the opposite? What if you had someone who was, say, an administrative assistant who's normally working, you know, 8 to 5, Monday to Friday, and you offer some alternative employment that's 48 hours on, 96 hours off? Would that be substantially similar?
Well, I don't know I guess the question is, you're asking, is what does substantially similar mean? And the statute, it's very clear if you read the statute, it says hours and location.
Right.
Okay, and, you know, you can construe that statute to mean, well, if it's shift pay, it has to be shift work. Or you can look at it and say, what is the purpose of this? It's a temporary light duty job. What they're looking to do is to provide economic security to the worker. That's what we tried to do. And, you know, we don't like having to not to deny benefits, but we'd rather have the individual paid his full pay. Yes, it was inconvenient for 6 weeks, but the guy had a shoulder surgery, for goodness sakes.
So, Mr. Balkenbush, it's an interesting question. Is the word hours in this context ambiguous? I don't know that it is, but does hours mean the same hours according to the shift that was worked before, or does it mean hours are worked after the during the recuperative period? Mr. Wall argues that it needs to be the same shift hours,
right.
And your point is, he worked less hours and got the same money.
Well, he would have on the light duty job.
Yes.
What I would say is the statute is the way it is to give flexibility to both parties. In other words, it doesn't say, as Mr. Wall argued, that it has to be the same shift hours. What you're trying to do is accommodate a kind of a moving situation in an injured, where an employee is injured.
Well, so if they're trying, I apologize.
That's right. I'll just finish this. Given the uncertainty or the conflicting arguments about how it's applied, what factors would the court or should a court or hearing officer use to compare the hours substantially similar?
Well, there's a number of ways, I suppose, and one of them is exactly just looking at the number of hours that it was worked and what are their daytime hours or graveyard shift. You have to be somewhat practical, I guess, is what I'm saying, just as the judge is and just as parties are with the law. The law has certain parameters, but you have to be practical about the situation. So
the job that he identified
Yes.
The logistics position, if I've characterized that correctly, what are the hours for that job? Is that a 48 on, 96 off?
You mean the administrative job?
No.
He said the logistics job.
The job that he proposed at the station.
Right. Well, he simply proposed that in his testimony. There's absolutely no, there is nothing to, there was no fire district. Somebody with authority from the fire district has said that what he, that confirmed or corroborated that what he stated is true. So he can.
Let me ask you, I don't quite understand. So there was no job that he was proposing available. You would have had to have created that position. I guess I don't understand.
Well, he simply testified, Your Honor, that there were these other jobs. He's not an authority.
Testimony is evidence, last I checked.
Well, but he has to be in authority for the district to provide that, and he's not an authority for the district on that. So,
okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks very much.
Would you provide that site, Mr. Balkin, to the clerk? Thanks a lot.
All right, counsel, thank you for the arguments, and this matter will stand submitted, and we'll stand at ease for a few minutes until we reconfigure the